stuck it together.
Yeah.
It flips and houses.
That's right.
Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting to order. This is Wednesday, December 14th, 2016, 4:30 p.m. We are in the Community Center at Sierra Room, 851 East William Street, Carson City, Nevada. Agenda notes. The Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, CAMPO, is pleased to make reasonable accommodations for members of the public who are disabled and wish to attend the meeting. If special arrangements for the meeting are necessary, please notify Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization staff in writing at 3505 Buddeye Way, Carson City, Nevada, 89701. Or comments at carsonareampo.com. Or you can call Patrick Pittinger at 775-887-2355 as soon as possible. For more information or for copies of the supporting material regarding any of the items listed on the agenda, please contact Patrick Pittinger, Transportation Manager, at 887-2355. Additionally, the agenda with all the supporting materials posted on the CAMPO website at www.carson.org/agendas or is available upon request at 3505 Buddeye Way. Agenda management notice. The chair may take items on the agenda out of order, combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and or remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. Disclosures. Any member of the CAMPO board may inform the chair of his or her intent to make a disclosure of a conflict of interest on any item appearing on the agenda or on any matter relating to the CAMPO's official business. Such disclosures may also be made at such time this specific agenda is introduced. So this time we'll do item number one, which is roll call and determination of a quorum.
Chairperson Piero.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Erb.
Here.
Member Bonkowski.
Here.
Member Kroll.
Here.
Member Kimbrough.
Here.
Member Smolenski. Member Zantino.
Here.
Ex officio Member Rosenberg.
Here.
Quorum is present.
All right, thank you. Item number two is public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the CAMPO board may approach the podium and speak on any matter relevant to or within the authority of CAMPO. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future CAMPO meeting. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item of the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. So is there anybody on the audience that came here for public comment? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to item number 3, which is approval of the minutes, 3A, for possible action, the November 9th, 2016 draft minutes.
Move to approve the minutes of November 9th, 2016 as presented.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All right, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Item number 4, the public meeting items, 4A. This is for possible action. To approve interlocal agreement NM696-16-804 for Surface Transportation Program Block Grant, STBG, funds between the Nevada Department of Transportation, NDOT, and Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. All right, who's taking this?
Thank you, Chair. Dirk Goring for the record. For the past 2 years, Campbell staff has been working with NDOT staff to have them allow us to take ownership and responsibility for STBG funds, which is Surface Transportation Programming funds. These are federal funds that are allocated to states and then distributed to urban areas within the state based on population. And this is a common occurrence throughout the United States. The funds are portioned based on census-defined areas. So the 2010 is kind of the leading document that governs how the funds are apportioned. The agreement between CAMPO and NDOT lays out a 4-year agreement for about $1 million annually to be set aside for CAMPO use. CAMPO is then responsible for working with Lyon County, Douglas County, and Carson City to allocate those funds appropriately. Some notable clauses in the contract is that CAMPO has 3 years to use those funds. After 3 years, if those funds are not used, those funds will return to NDOT for their use so that they don't get returned back to the federal government. Another clause is that we are limited to a 2-year cumulative balance. So we can have a balance of approximately $2 million. After that, any funds beyond that goes back to NDOT for their use. Campbell staff has worked with NDOT staff on those two clauses. We're not entirely happy with them, but their concern was that if we don't use those funds, it affects federal funding for the state. And so we've came to this conclusion based on their concerns and our attempts to get what we can. So, but that concludes my comments. That concludes my comments on the agreement. The next item is related, but Patrick's going to get into that item next. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, is there anybody that has questions of staff on this one? Go ahead.
I'll just add that, you know, just overall the way we approached this with NDOT was that there is a portion of federal funds that comes to the state that has traditionally been allocated for areas between 200,000 population, of which CAMPO is part of that, in that range. And we worked with NDOT staff, including Sandra and other members of our staff who are here, to determine what proportion of that population group in Nevada is represented in the CAMPO area. And as you can see in the agreement and in the board packet, just about exactly a third, 33% of the population for the 2010 census of that population group is in the CAMPO area. So what we're looking at is a third of the money that's allocated for population groups of that size.
Dirk, you were talking about the 3-year period. Is that obligated, or is that all invoices to contractors and everything paid out?
Is Once the fund becomes obligated, then it goes off. It's safe. We don't have to worry about losing those funds once they become obligated. If they are unobligated and they reach that time limit, then they are returned to NDOT.
So a follow-up question on that. Till we get through the design phase, we go out to bid on a project. Once we've accepted the bid on that contract, is that considered obligated, or is it based on the actual work being completed?
Go ahead if you know.
Yeah, so there's a LPA, Local Public Assistant Division, within NDOT, and each municipality will work with NDOT to form an agreement, and that agreement is broken up into phases. So as you go through the phases, that's when the funds become obligated. So you have a design phase and a construction phase. So you go through design, and once you enter that design phase, those funds are then obligated. Funds for construction are not obligated at that point until that project reaches the construction phase, which is determined by the project management, kind of the project management.
Well, and if I may, Sandra, you correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the actual moment of obligation for these funds for the construction, which is the primary use of the funds, happens after 100% design, after all the appropriate reviews by NDOT staff, DB, and otherwise, and it is obligated right before the notice to proceed is provided to the local entity, and it's not until the notice to proceed is issued that the city is able to advertise the project for bid. Is that correct?
That's correct. We would obligate before you advertise for the construction piece.
Yes.
The obligation
happens. Notice to proceed is issued. Then the city can advertise. We have to make sure that happens before we advertise.
Right.
So then the final amount of obligated funds is subject to change based on the accepted bid for the construction?
Well, no, the project is obligated. Say the project is $500,000. $500,000 is obligated. Notice to proceed is issued. City goes out, for bids. And presuming that the project comes in on bid, the amount of obligation isn't impacted. You go through the project, and if it is under, there will be remaining funds available. If it goes over, then it's the responsibility of the local entity that entered the agreement to make up the difference.
So Patrick, I didn't see that part. NDOT has review authority over all of these things, so that they're in the time loop.
Well, the way it works is the LPA process, the local public agency process. This money would be treated, another type of funding we use called TAP funding. So if you are awarded a TAP project, you enter the LPA process, and the process includes entering an agreement. So whichever county has the funding enters an agreement directly with NDOT and goes through the regular LPA process, which means doing 30, 60, 90, 100% review, clearing right-of-way, any environmental that might be applicable, DVE sections. You go through that same process for this type of funding because it is federal funding.
I was going to say, they're just the guardian for the federal regulations, just another layer to make sure that happens because they're responsible for those funds, I assume. Okay.
Right, and just to clarify, that occurs for all of our federal funds that go to local agencies, whether it's something like this where we choose to sub-allocate versus automatic allocation that goes to the larger MPOs. So everybody, all the local entities who are using federal funds that come through the state still have to go through that LPA process.
Is there any further questions? All right.
I have one more comment.
Go ahead.
Just I want to thank both my staff as well as Campo staff for working through this. I know it was a little cumbersome, and we did put some kind of tight restrictions on it because there's a couple of concerns on the state side, making sure we, one, reach our obligation limit each year so we don't miss out on any federal funds, but also that we're spending all the federal funds in a timely manner so we don't lose them. But we do want Campo to be successful on this. We want this to continue. So we'll definitely work closely with staff to make sure that we're not setting anyone up for failure. We all want this to work out. We think it's the right thing to do, to share with the MPO this pot of money. So you know, we'll be as flexible as we can, and we want to see this succeed.
All right, can I get a motion, please?
I move to approve interlocal agreement NM696-166-804 for surface transportation program block grant funds between Nevada Department of Transportation and Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization.
I'll second that.
All right, it's been moved and seconded to approve this item. Is there anybody from the public that came to address this? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. We'll go on to item number 4B for possible action to formally agree on the distribution and schedule of surface transportation block grant funds between the three member agencies of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll take this one. This is a related item to the previous item. Now that that CAMPO has acted to enter that agreement on the previous item with the Nevada Department of Transportation, the next order of business, in a multi-step process, is to determine the funding allocation between the three member agencies of CAMPO, Carson City, Douglas County, and Lyon County. There are options available under this, but what we did was we looked at the areas that were available to be funded. The previous item actually showed maps that displayed the areas where the funding can be spent. We worked with NDOT staff to ensure the consistency of the population figures for those urban areas. The money actually can't be spent in the entire CAMPO planning area, but only in the urbanized areas within the CAMPO area. So we ascertained the distribution of population among the urbanized areas within the CAMPO planning area. And as is included in your packet, the distribution by population is 70.6% Carson City, 15.9% Lyon County, and 13.5% Douglas County. We did have a meeting. We contacted the county managers of both counties, and we had a separate meeting since a couple weeks ago, and it included both Jeff Page from Lyon County and after speaking with John Erb and Larry Werner. John Erb attended that meeting to represent Douglas County, and what we determined based on the restrictions of the funding, the type of funding, the need to be moving the projects forward, and a desire not to have a large number of LPA projects that need to be managed and have various different types of agreements. If you look at the funding distribution, it would be possible for each of the counties to get a portion of the funding each year. But doing so would result in relatively small figures, particularly for Lyon and Douglas County in each year. And we decided that it was most preferable to have the counties get their entire amounts in individual years to make more substantial sums to make more reasonable projects. So the recommendation that has been agreed upon at the staff level is that Lyon County would receive their 4 years of funding in the second year of this program. This is 4 years. We're in year one right now. Douglas County would receive their 4 years of funding in the third year, and Carson City would receive the funding of years one and four and the remaining funds for each of years two and three. Now that, while that is a recommendation for action that would allow for the for, in this case, Carson City to pursue an LPA project for year one, two LPA projects potentially for year one, that would allow Lyon and Douglas counties as well to plan for their future projects, and that was definitely what we discussed. But having said that, this doesn't have to be absolutely set in stone. If for some reason 9 months from now Lyon County decides that they don't want all their money in year two. I'm just saying that, or or you know, there's some change requested by one of the counties, this action could be modified during the four-year period, is the point. So that's how we've set it up, and that's what we've recommended. And I'll take any questions.
All right, is there any questions for Patrick? You got one? Mark, go ahead.
Out of curiosity. This is like just a, to me, it's more like a resolution or something rather than a regulation or an agreement, because there's nobody signs it. We just, as a board, say this is what we agree to. And so this has no, it could change next year or the next year. Hopefully population changes don't change small percentages, because you're going by the 2010 census I saw. So I guess that stays fairly firm. It just seems more informal than usually for when you're cutting up the pie with sums of money that government manages. Is that, do you understand what I'm trying to say?
No, I understand. I mean, there's
like an interlocal, or there, it isn't in here.
There were certainly other options that were available to do this. I mean, it is, we are requesting formal action from this body. To answer your question about the population, we don't expect to adjust the population numbers during this four-year period. We would expect to do so when another census comes out. I will note that one of the reasons we do use a percentage base is that there is a possibility that there would be a slight increase in the funding over the course of this. We mentioned it's $1,023,000 this year. There could be a slight increase, and we could adjust for that on a percentage basis as well. But you're correct. There were other ways that this could be accomplished, but we are requesting formal action by Campbell.
Is there anybody else? All right. Then can I get a motion, please?
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
I move to formally agree on the distribution and schedule of surface transportation program block grant funds between the three member agencies of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization as recommended by staff.
All right, it's been moved and seconded to approve with the proposed motion from staff. Is there anybody from the audience that came to address this issue? All right, seeing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. All right, we're going to go to item number 5, which is internal communications and administrative matters. These are non-action items. 5A, future agenda items. Any?
Well, consistent with there are many future steps to be enacted about for the actions that were just taken, including those LPA agreements that, you know, each entity will enact. But another future item that will be required of CAMPO is to amend the Transportation Improvement Program, the federally required listing of federally funded projects. So we'll be moving forward with that process to make sure that those projects are added appropriately to the TIP and eventually to the STIP.
Oh, go ahead and ask a question.
Patrick, those are project specific and not fund specific, correct? So do you have to wait until we have projects that have been approved to amend?
The projects need to be, in this case, the year one funds are for Carson City. So Carson City just needs to have projects that they want to put on the list. The projects don't have to be, they actually need to get into the TIP so they can get through the LPA process. I'm looking at Sonder for a nod. Thank you. Yes, it's a bit of a chicken and the egg. You have to get it into the TIP and develop a project concept, an estimate for the project that's good enough to put in the TIP, and then begin the actual development of the project, which in this case will include the LPA process. And that's one of the checklist items in the LPA process, is it in the TIP yet? If that answers your question, I hope.
All right, we're going to move on to item number 6, which is board comments. And I'll start on my left over here. No.
And a happy new year.
Sandra? So, well, I have a I have a board comment. So this is going to be my last meeting with Campo, and I've had fun, and I just wanted to thank staff and my fellow commissioners here on this board, and I'll miss you all, but I'm sure I'll be out there somewhere, so thank you.
Well, we follow up on that and say thanks to you for running a great meeting, and you know, sometimes we look at Campo and as being, you know, kind of an adjunct to our RTC stuff, but Campo really is an important part of how we fund things in the region around here. And, you know, it's to your credit in, that, you know, we get along on this board, that we know how to, you know, we all get along like we just allocated some funds between jurisdictions. Look, that's yours. That's what you do, Ray. So congratulations to you. I think speak for all of us here. So thanks.
Thank you. All right, so now item number 7, which is public comment again. So here's your chance if you want to talk. All right, going once, going twice. All right, we'll move to adjournment then. So we'll adjourn, and the RTC meeting will start in at 5 o'clock. Thank you.
Yeah. 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 Ye
700, 300.
Okay.
The overall idea. Well, I can't. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
You don't know who's on that, and they're not going to reach out to you.
Yeah.
I'd like to call to order this meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission. This is Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. We are in the Sierra Room here in Carson City, Nevada. Can we have a roll call, please, Kathy?
Chairperson Bonkowski.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Smolenski. Commissioner Kroll.
Here.
Commissioner Kimbrough.
Here.
Commissioner Zentino.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is for public comment. Is there anybody in the audience that is here for public comment tonight? I see nobody walking up to the podium, so we will move on to item number three, which is approval of the minutes. Has everybody had a chance to read the minutes, draft minutes? I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We are now on to item 4A for possible action to direct staff to continue public involvement efforts through the Transportation Resource Advisory Forum, known as TRAFIC, for Carson City. The advisory group to staff will meet quarterly with meetings coordinated by staff. Staff will provide reports on traffic-related activities to the RTC at the regular RTC meetings. Graham, are you taking this, or Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this is an action item, but to give you an overview, the RTC directed staff to work with this group that is advisory to staff. Meetings were held in June, July, and August, as well as they were invited to a public meeting in September regarding the South Carson Street Corridor Study. Another meeting was held just a couple weeks ago on November 29th. And we did discuss multiple issues at that meeting with the traffic group, including ongoing projects, funding availability, the need to move forward with the lack of the indexing, which was not successful at the as a ballot measure during the November election. We did discuss matters involving the prioritization of remaining funds, and specifically the prioritization of funds towards the arterial and collector streets of the city, which, while they are a minority of the miles of roads in town, they are the majority of traffic, the trips made in the city, and we did speak with the traffic group about future meetings. And I did express to them the same thing as I expressed to our chair outside the meeting, is that I do believe that there's value in the traffic group in continuing to meet at some level, to have the exchange of information in both directions, both to provide information to them as members of the public and representative of numerous organizations in town, and to share information to be as transparent as possible about the prioritizations going forward, particularly in light of the not having sufficient funds available to properly maintain a road system, and also to get their input, as we did at this last meeting, regarding what they believe is important things to look at when we are prioritizing the use of those funds. What I discussed with them and what I have recommended to you is that while we do retain the group, that we move to, rather than having scheduled monthly meetings, that we would move to quarterly meetings starting in January. We evaluated the, we talked to them about it. We evaluated the when this room is available, frankly, so we continue to meet here. And what we came upon was the third Tuesday of the month in January, April, July, and October at 5:30 p.m. in this room. And so that is our recommendation, that we continue on that path and meeting with them, but on a quarterly basis.
Patrick, were there 21 original members invited to the committee?
There were 22 original members.
What percentage of attendance have you seen?
Honestly, it is varied. We had, I have to count in my head here. I mean, we had the last meeting. We only had about 50% membership attend, but we have had greater at some of the other meetings, and we hope to. We encourage that further. We did have some extenuating circumstances for some of the members, so while we wish we would have had more present at the last one, we will make additional attempts to remind folks and to ensure their availability, and including that should this be approved by this body this evening, we will make sure we get it on their calendars immediately for starting in January.
So do you anticipate keeping the same number of members going forward?
There was a reduction in one member. We have 21 members, but it's almost identical to the original membership, and we have not had any members express any desire to be removed either individually or as an organization. Even of the folks that couldn't attend, they were by and large very good about expressing their continued interest and their apologies for not being able to attend. So I don't see a need to make any further changes to that.
And has the committee been used more to vet things from staff, or has it been used for like an idea forum to discuss potential ideas, or both?
I'd like to think both. I mean, we did propose ideas to them, and we did have suggestions that we hadn't thought of and proposed. So while we were maybe vetting some suggestions of our own, we did receive input that was unsolicited and appreciated, and enhanced what we were going to be looking at.
So because of all the various stakeholders, Muscle Power being one, you've then seen the value in having these stakeholders at the table to give input and try to circumvent potential issues up front rather than down the road when we're, say, in design?
Oh, absolutely. We like I said, we want to we want to increase the transparency. We want to receive the input. And intentionally, this group is, you know, almost 50-50 citizens who applied that are not affiliated with a specific group and representatives of specific groups, whether they be the realtors or the school district, or we even have an NDOT member, which we appreciate. And yes, we definitely want to, we definitely anticipate benefiting from their input so that we can go into the process more confident knowing that we've gotten their input.
Do we have questions from the other commissioners? Mark? And then the mayor?
First, yeah, Mark. Go.
I've been to two of the meetings, and watched the interaction. Has been great, actually. It's this community, having spent many years here in groups, this community is really good at having a public forum for, like, forming these committees that you guys, not you guys, that the government, the Carson River, and the, all these different groups that have been formed to kind of take the opportunity to get a lot of information, be informed, and it's another forum for the people to come to talk about all these issues before they get to the construction and or at the vote at the Board of Supervisors level. So this board works that way for transportation, which is one of the most needed areas for funding in this community as we move forward is this. So I really think this board is really critically important right now and supportive. I was a little bummed out that they didn't stand up to help with the gas indexing that from they were given a lot of information and it didn't come out as like I maybe even Patrick would like to have seen a little more support there. But I think it's really important. But I would suggest maybe Patrick that there a simple little questionnaire maybe at the next meeting asking them the question about the importance of that committee and their commitment and maybe even getting something from them like how do they feel this is important and then how could they feel it might be better or something. Ask them a few questions and get some feedback so that you have that to give us to show here. This group really thinks this is great and they support it and they will attend these meetings and stuff. So I thought maybe a little more information on that side. But I was really impressed with how much time that Patrick puts in to keep the transparency in there. And the facts are being delivered to them that are really important, which is bottom line numbers, and they're handing them the numbers and the figures of what's exactly going on with the roads so that everybody has a chance to understand that rather than maybe editorialize it in a newspaper that they're totally misinformed about how it all happens. This board can help with that. I think that's enough said, but I think it's a great program.
Mayor.
No, I was you took what I where I was going. I see we have the First Amendment back there, though. I don't know. They misinform folks. They do a pretty good job of informing. So. Did you hear that?
I can't hear any of this.
Oh, you didn't hear it all? Okay. Well, remember Kimbrough was saying that you do a heck of a job. Thank you. And we were also saying that
Look at the tape.
Actually, what we were saying here and what I'm echoing here is that, you know, we'd like to hear back some feedback from the traffic committee on, you know, what do they see of value, what do they see, you know, some questions of where they think the traffic committee is going. And I agree with that. That was what I was going to ask. And because, as he mentioned, the issue of roads repair, funding, and maintenance is at a critical stage. It has been for a while. So the more public input we can get, the more public vetting we can get on how to address these issues, the better. Okay.
Check. Okay. Okay. Then I'll open this up for public comment. Is there anybody in the public that would like to speak to this issue tonight? Going once, going twice. Nobody's walking up to the podium, so I'll bring this back to the commission and entertain a motion.
To direct staff to continue public involvement efforts through the Transportation Resource Advisory Forum for Carson City. The advisory group to staff will meet quarterly with meetings coordinated by staff. Staff will provide reports on the traffic-related activities to the RTC at regular RTC meetings.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? I see no discussion, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. We are now on to item 4B, an update on the performance of Jump Around Carson Transit System and the direction of the system going forward. And
thank you,
Graham,
Mr. Chair.
You take that.
Yep, thank you. I will take this. So staff is looking into potential changes to the Jack fixed route system and thought this would be an appropriate time to include an overall update of on the Jack Transit system. So I will touch on things like ridership, budget, and capital needs in addition to the proposed service changes. So this is an overview of the two services provided by Jack Fixed Route, and which is the purple line, and Jack Assist Paratransit Service, which is the green line. The combined services is the black line, and as you can see, there is a slight upward trend in ridership for Jack Assist and a slight decline in ridership for the Jack Fixed Route system from the previous fiscal year. The difference is about 3,500 trips from fiscal year 15 to 16 for the fixed route, which has actually been identified as the difference in ridership during the fair. In fiscal year 15, which was calendar year 2014, there was one fewer day of service than in fiscal year 16, which was calendar year 15. And the ridership during the one extra weekday that year was about 3,500 trips. So realistically, Jack fixed route ridership is flat more than anything. This graph gets into a little bit more detail, showing each individual route in the Jack system. The WNC service, which didn't even begin until the fiscal year 15, is kind of hard to identify. It looks kind of like the x-axis there. And here again, you can see where the decline comes from for fixed route as a whole, which is Route 3, which is the route that goes by the Fandango and the Fuji Park and where all trips from the fair are attributed. So it's showing that decline from fiscal year 15 to 16. And route 1 is basically even, with Route 2A slightly up and 2B slightly down. Here you can see a drastic increase in efficiency in Jack Assist, which can mostly be attributed to a new software that was procured in December of 2015, almost exactly 1 year ago. So thank you to the RTC for approving that contract with Ecolane, our new scheduling and dispatching software. As you can see, revenue hours, which is hours when a vehicle is actually in service, serving clients, customers, as opposed to fueling or what we call deadheading, which is traveling from the location of the last drop-off, for example, getting back to the bus yard at the end of the day. Revenue hours is actually decreasing while ridership is increasing. From fiscal year 15 to 16, that was only with a partial fiscal year of Ecolane. So even greater efficiency is projected with a full year of the software. And so far in fiscal year 17, we are on pace for that. So this graph actually comes from a report that is supplied.
Before you go on, I just want to make a note on that last slide,
mm-hmm.
that actually represents a 20% increase in efficiency, which translates directly to money. So we're getting
Correct.
20% more value for the same number of dollars.
Correct.
So I think that this is a really important number to point out to people that, I mean, you guys are doing an excellent job in really making the system as efficient as possible, and we're getting the most out of it that we can.
That's absolutely true, and I thank you for pointing that out, because the paratransit service is the more expensive of the two to operate. So it's especially noteworthy. So this, like I said, this graph comes to us from a report that's supplied to us on a monthly basis from Washoe RTC. And they put this table together basically to show that they're about on pace with national trends, the red line there, which is a downward trend in ridership for a downward trend in ridership within the last couple of fiscal years. This is also from Washoe RTC and shows the ridership for the inner city service, which is funded partially by the RTC, the Carson City RTC. A fare increase was implemented
at the beginning of fiscal year 14. That's important to note there because of the ridership has been on the decline ever since. And the opening of the freeway extension obviously happened around that same time, less than a year prior. So that could be a contributing factor as well. But it's also important to note that there's a direct correlation between gas prices and transit ridership. As gas prices go down, ridership goes down because more people are driving. This is a brief look at the budget. The thing that jumps out here is the large increase in capital expenses from fiscal year 16 to 17, which is primarily attributable to the two new buses that we recently acquired. It's also important to note that while we are showing a slight increase in operating expenses, there is somewhat of a cushion built in to the budget there for fiscal year 17, so we expect to come in slightly under that number by the end of the year. So it shouldn't be as much of a difference from the fiscal year 16 actuals. We were expecting a slight increase to the operations contract in fiscal year 18, but it looks like that will not be happening now. So if anything, it should just be the standard rising costs due to any inflation that's present or anything like that. And then we're also forecasted to purchase another bus like the ones we just bought, and to also move the Jack administrative facility and bus yard to the new location, the old animal shelter, in fiscal year 18.
I just want to add one thing that just as a reminder, and you know, and for educational purposes, the operating expenses shown in this, the majority of it is reimbursed at 50%, some of it's reimbursed at 80%, but the capital expenses, the typical rate of reimbursement is 80%, but for the vehicles it's actually 85%. So the majority of that increase is reimbursed at an 85% rate by the federal government.
Thank you, Patrick. This is a look at capital needs for the immediate future. There are three other fixed route buses that are at the end of their useful lives, in addition to the two that we just replaced. At the end of their useful lives, as defined by the FTA, that we would like to replace as soon as funding is available. But obviously, we have to factor in the cost of converting the old animal shelter to the new admin facility. And at this time, we only have a ballpark estimate for what that expense might be. So the budget will be refined as we get a better picture of that expense. And finally, there's also always a need to upgrade bus stops. So there's a little room in the budget for other expenses involved with moving routes or adding amenities. This on-time performance data comes to us from Ecolane, so that's why we're only showing it for this calendar year. As you can see, there's an overall decline in on-time performance, which can at least be partially attributable to the large-scale road construction that was going on downtown, centered right around where the Jack Transfer Plaza is. There was obviously the east-west transmission main project in the downtown corridor project. This table provides detail about the bus routes and performance of the vehicles in service along the routes. The first column shows the distance in miles of each route. The second column is the published time, the time that it takes from when each bus leaves the transfer to the time it completes its route and arrives back at the transfer. The third column shows how fast each vehicle must be traveling on average during its route in order to complete the mileage in the first column within the allotted 54 minutes in the second column. The second to last column shows the average time that buses have actually taken to complete their respective route throughout the calendar year. This is based on data obtained from Ecolane. The last column shows the actual average speed traveled along each route. So what this is basically showing is that the buses are taking longer than projected to complete each run as a result of lower traveling speeds. An apparent solution is to increase the average rate of travel, which is not always an option because you can't pick up people while you're in motion. And then, or to alter the route itself in some fashion. Now, this doesn't factor in, these numbers don't factor in distance traveled in detours or other delays caused by the construction that I just mentioned. But even in times with little to no construction, we haven't been meeting the minimum on-time performance as determined in our Title VI plan, which was 85%.
Hey, just a moment. Just want to add two quick things. Number one, we've never had this data before. We've never been able to show this data before. This is a result of the implementation of that same technology that is helping us be more efficient on the paratransit side. There is also technology in the fixed route side that provides this to us. And then the second thing I want to mention is that when the system was implemented with four routes, it was originally envisioned to expand, and there hasn't been the funding available to actually implement additional routes. But we have had increasing pressure over the years to try to serve additional areas. And while we haven't been able to respond to many of those, there have been a couple of instances that, and I'll give you one example, is that the Nevada Health Center was built on Research Way just south of College. Our route used to only be to the north of College, and there was definitely a safety issue there because there was not a safe way for people traveling between the Jack bus stop and the Nevada Health Clinic to cross College Parkway there. So we did add another loop to the route, and we're glad that we did for safety purposes, but things like that, they do take time. They do impact what you have before you, and we have to look at how we proceed on those things as we go. But just as an example, we're building a traffic signaler now. There will be a safe way to cross, so we'll have to look at things like that. But that's what plays into this.
Thank you, Patrick. So there are also some maintenance issues that have an impact on service and on the system as a whole. I mentioned previously that we have another three vehicles that are at the end of their useful lives, and an aging fleet contributes to increasing maintenance costs, which obviously detracts from other areas of the budget. And it also has an impact on vehicle downtime, which is the time that vehicles are not able to be placed into revenue service. If a vehicle is out for an extended period, that results in refunds given to advertisers that place ads on the buses. And if vehicles are constantly breaking down while in service, that causes missed trips and impacts system reliability, which can also lead to lower ridership. We also don't want to be leaving our customers stranded. We want them to get where they're going. So,
does a software program allow you to prepare a schedule that would show the number of times that a vehicle is broken down while en route?
The software doesn't actually track that. No, I mean we track that through other means, but not through that program.
What do those numbers look like? I mean, I read what you're saying here, but what's the underlying data say?
Yeah, you know, I don't have that number off the top of my head. I can certainly get back to you with those figures.
But if I may, we did, for some reason they come in batches, and I don't have those specific numbers either. But we have had instances where, even though we have seven fixed route bigger vehicles, whether they be the purple ones or the new larger white ones that are designed to be out on route, we've had instances, particularly during the summer, where we haven't even had four of those available to run the routes, and we've had to put the little green buses out on the actual route, which is certainly detrimental because there's a reason why those aren't on routes. Those handicap lifts take a long time to operate. And they don't efficiently move folks. They don't have the capacity of the larger buses, and we do that when absolutely necessary to keep buses out on route, of course. But that's another impact that we deal with.
How many buses per route do you have?
We've got one bus on each of the four routes, 1, 2A, 2B, and 3. So there are four buses in service for 13 hours a weekday and 8 hours on Saturday. We have seven fixed route vehicles, and we have seven paratransit vehicles. So out of the seven fixed route, we need four of them to be running to keep those routes going. But there have been times where you actually have four of them broken down simultaneously, and you got to send out a little green Jack Assist bus on route.
So that leads us to changes in the, to the system. This is a map showing all four routes, and the red circles are the areas of routes that I'll be discussing as candidates for route adjustments. This wasn't circled on the previous map because it is a route adjustment that has already gone into effect when the downtown project was completed and officially open for business. Route 3 was adjusted on the inbound only in order to utilize the bus pullout in front of City Hall. The bus pullout on the west side of Carson Street, the other across from City Hall, might still be utilized at some point, but for now, just the east side is being used. And that's the blue little icon on the map there. The red one is the bus stop that had to be removed as a result of this change. That's on the other side here. Also not pictured here was the removal of the bus stop on the west side of Airport Road, just south of US 50. This was done during the construction project that was going on there, and the stop was removed for safety reasons. Folks looking to access that area can still use the stop on Woodside, just west of Airport, just east of Airport, which is basically right around the corner from the stop that was removed there. So there are three changes to routes that are being proposed at this point. There are these ones here are the red circles that were on that map two slides ago. Two of the proposed changes impact routes 2A and 2B, and the other one impacts Route 3. There are no proposed changes to Route 1, but updates to the time points will need to be made as a result of any route changes, and the Route 1 time points will also be touched up as well to get them more in line with current timing patterns along the route. So the first proposed change, which is to 2A and 2B, would eliminate some of the circuitousness of the route and would result in the elimination of 11 stops that are existing, as denoted by the red X's there on the map. Four new stops would be added along the route segment, a pair of stops there at Lompa and College up here, and a pair at Lompa and Nye here. And this would result in a savings of about 9/10 of a mile or about 3.5 minutes per route per run. So if I actually go back a few slides here quickly, if you're looking at 2B, this number here, 58.2 minutes is what we're showing the average time it takes. If you take 3.5 minutes off of that, you get down just about to that 54-minute timing that we have laid out for that route. And then again, if you take the 3.5 minutes off 2A here, that 57.1, again, that gets you within that 54-minute threshold. So the other route change being proposed along routes 2A and 2B.
Can I ask a question, Grant?
Yeah,
sorry.
Yep, sorry.
That's a lot of stops. On 2A and 2B, how many stops are you going to have total on that route? Four?
There's about 50 to 60 stops on each individual route.
Okay, so that's not all the stops you've got on.
No.
Those are just
no.
The ones that you're proposing to eliminate.
Correct.
All right, I got you. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So the other route change being proposed around along routes 2A and 2B would essentially take a shortcut in the Empire Elementary area and would mean the elimination of an additional 5 existing stops with the addition of 3 new ones. The savings is only about 1/4 mile or about 1 minute, but there is a stop sign right there at the intersection of Airport and Gordonia. So it makes logistical sense for the bus 2B in particular to use that deceleration and acceleration on a turn rather than in the middle of a straightaway. The proposed change to Route 3 would be sort of an extension of the one that was already implemented. Again, on the inbound only, we would utilize Carson Street, this time cutting out the section on the west side between 10th and Musser, whereas previously the section along Division between Musser and Robinson was altered. So in this case, five stops would be taken out, and none would be added, but there would be a distance savings of about 3/4 mile or about 3 minutes. And again, going back to this slide from before, for Route 3, if you're taking 3 minutes off of this 57.1, that gets you back to the 54 minutes there that we have scheduled. And I will mention at this time, while there is no changes being proposed at this time to Route 1, you do see that this 56.8 is above the 54 minute threshold there. But we feel that we can get that back on time with just adjustments to the time points only. So we don't feel there's a need to alter the route at this time.
So Graham, if you stop on the route on the Route 3 map, the reason there's no stops being added is because you have a stop there at 5th right off of Carson, and then you have a stop at Musser and Carson, which would
correct
be basically the beginning and the end of the change.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry, I failed to mention that the proposed change here is the dashed purple line here, and the proposed section of the route being taken away is this dotted black line here, and then obviously the stops being taken out are these red X's, as I mentioned. So the proposed changes would trigger the Campo policy on proposed service changes. Those that I mentioned that have already been implemented did not trigger that requirement, since it did not alter at least 10% of the stops along the affected route. So we'll follow this process, which begins with the initiation of a 30-day public comment period. The notice of this is going on buses, the Jack and Campo websites, and in the newspaper this week. The public meeting is scheduled for January 10th in the Bonanza Room for anybody here or watching on TV that's interested. I believe we will be able to provide an update at the January 11th meeting, but any formal action wouldn't be until the February meeting at the earliest. So once we've received approval, the changes would be implemented as soon as possible. Bus stop signs and amenities would be moved, and the websites would be updated, and then the printing of maps would follow. And then we would seek to gather data and compare it to that of the prior year, and to see where we're at and move forward from there. These proposed changes that I've mentioned could be part of a phased approach. And there are other things in the early stages of consideration, one of those being the restoration of service to the Topsy Lane shopping plazas, and then also a possible relocation of the transfer center. That would allow for some flexibility in routing and run timing without adversely impacting current areas that are being served. So as I mentioned, staff will continue to evaluate and analyze the data and provide reports and make recommendations as necessary. So with that, I will take any other questions that you may have.
Are there any questions of the commissioners?
Jack?
So in my day job, I have a monthly meeting with an economist, and a couple months ago they were having conversations about what's going on around the state, and one of the conversations about Carson City was that there's a business, and I won't name names or anything, but just generally that there was this business that was interested in hiring about 30 more staff and increasing their activities. But the biggest barrier that they had to that was transportation, that these apparently were entry-level jobs, and a lot of folks dealt with not having cars and whatnot. And so it seems like this is the perfect kind of an opportunity is there. And I don't know if those conversations go on with businesses around town or if there's opportunity to have those conversations, but is there, and historically, has there been those types of conversations, or is there opportunity to have those conversations with or for the opportunity to create business in Carson City?
But yeah, I'll answer that one because, you know, I've been dealing with this for about 10 and a half years. There are a lot of places in town that would be that would be desirable to go to, whether they be the Arrowhead Industrial Area or there's a senior housing complex that brings us to our attention. The best students for riding buses, just in general, are middle school students. Unfortunately, our buses don't go to either of the two middle schools. And it's not that we don't have a desire to go to those places or a desire to serve those entities or businesses in the case that you're bringing up. But there's always trade-offs to these things, just like these routing. These are not things we take lightly. Any routing change does affect certain bus stops, but there's a trade-off there for being on time and being reliable with hourly service. That's very important when you only run every hour. So the answer is typically it's always possible to send a bus route somewhere, but it's always about money and trade-offs. You could send a bus anywhere in town, but then you're going to have to stop serving areas that are served today that generate ridership. So unless there is additional money found to add service, to be able to add a route, you can't extend the current routes, but to somehow enhance the service, it's very difficult to take service away from areas that have been served and have been relying on that service for over a decade now.
Stupid question for you. On the time, how'd you arrive at 54 minutes a route?
We work on hour headways. So basically, it's a pulse system that all the buses leave downtown every hour on the bottom of the hour. And so you only have the string of time to get out, get back, and allow for folks to transfer. So 6 minutes is really a minimum amount of time to have as to control for the variation in different routing changes. How many wheelchairs are you lifting, for example? For all the buses to get together, have all the people move between the buses and get on the other buses and to be able to depart again. And frankly, it's the only break time that the drivers are allowed to, for example, use restroom facilities and the like. So it'd be great if that were 10 minutes, but we don't think that it's reasonable to try to accomplish these routes in 50.
It's important to have an hour. I mean, what's magic about an hour as opposed to making an hour in 5 minutes?
If I may, it's consistency, understandability, and truthfully, an hour is already is the top limit of what's, frankly, the standard nationwide. I mean, I know Graham and I went to a conference in early August of all small transit system directors. That was it, 75 people who do just what we do. And we even had a professional transportation planning consultant do a workshop with us. And it was, people would lament if you actually had to do something unfortunate like go to an hour, because it really does affect the usefulness of the system, the understandability of the system, but once again, it's all trade-offs. You could make it an hour and a half and serve a huge area, but it would take so long to get from point A to point B that while that would make it a bigger area served, it would reduce the usefulness of the service because the travel time would get so long.
I think, when you look at the ridership, and I know the chairman and I have mentioned this before, that, increase in ridership in the last few years, I know it's sort of tapering right now to flat in some of it, but it's really rather astounding what's happening here. And sometimes you can get you can look at some of the buses and you don't see anybody on them, or you see one or two people, but that's not that really doesn't tell you what's going on your entire system. I think it's important, as Jack said, that it's an important part of our economic base in Carson City, and it's going to be even more important as the world goes on. But another question to you is, how much does the fare box revenue, if you can call it that, contribute to the overall operations of the system?
But we generate about $100,000 a year annually
in Farebox revenue, but that's between the two systems, Jack and Jack Assist, whereas our operating budget is, you know, over a million. So, I mean,
so it's 10%
but,
or less.
But if I may, it's
yeah, go ahead.
It's de facto, it's more like 15%, because what's not shown specifically in here is that our free senior ridership is actually increasing. It increased from about 70,000 in fiscal year 15 to 73,000 in fiscal year 16. So even though we had a slight decrease, that actually increased. And those people don't pay a fare, but we receive 50,000 a year in lieu of the fare. So it's actually about in the 15%.
And also not included in that Farebox revenue is the DHCFP monies that we get on reimbursement from folks who ride paratransit service through Medicaid. Their services, their trips are provided on reimbursement through Medicaid.
So what would you estimate to be the total, maybe it was on one of your schedules, but what would you estimate to be the total amount of Jack costs, Jack and Jack Assist, that is reimbursed?
By fares and
by reimbursed by fares or grants or whatever.
Oh wow, the federal grants cover the vast majority of the cost.
Correct. Yeah, that we operate on now about 400,000, from the general fund. So that's the local contribution approximately per year, and as I mentioned, our total operating costs for the year are over a million. So
this fiscal year,
I'd say it's about 67%.
In an average year, it's about 70%, not from the city. This year, with our big capital budget, it's less than 20% from the city. It varies by year, but 70% from federal monies and fares is pretty fair.
Okay, just simplify that real quick. Tell me again, what's the percentage from the general fund?
About 400,000.
Yeah, well, percentage-wise, what is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's probably about a third of operating.
I'm not belaboring this, but I'm hearing a third from you, and I'm not hearing that from him.
Sorry. Well, here, let me just
30%.
Here, I'll do this, and I know we need to move along because there are some time constraints, but the total expenses in fiscal year 2016 were about $1.35 million. $400,000 is what we got, I believe, from the city general fund. So that's just under a third came from the city general fund. Say 15% comes from Farebox revenues, right? So say 45% comes from 30% from general fund, 15% from the Farebox, 55% federal. Do you agree?
I would agree. Yes.
That was fiscal year 16.
That helps. Thanks. All right. Thank you. Sorry.
Is it, are there time constraints for this one today?
No. Oh. I have a water subconservancy meeting that I have to go to after this meeting.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'll drop. Double D. I'll drop from 20 questions to 10 then. So I had the same question on the 54 minutes, and I figured that I was figuring that a poor person, which I've seen several times standing in the cold next to a sign, wouldn't want to stand there much longer than 54 minutes anyway, versus the transit station, and understood he needed that time to get everybody off and on and transferred. So that made a lot of sense. And by the number of stops, that explains why you don't have a bench at every stop, because that the general fund contribution have to triple to put a bench at everyone else. So I was a good good presentation on exactly how it works with Jack. And was this, you said you put it on the bus, so is this a chance for the public, the traveling public? This would have been the forum for them to show up if there were any concerns.
No,
is there another forum for that?
No, we'll be having a separate meeting in a Bonanza room on the 10th.
So then there might be some people come forward that might change some of those stuff.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and like I said, we'll post notices, websites, on the buses themselves, in the newspaper, but then we'll also directly distribute to certain entities.
So that's future. That wasn't before this, so I missed that. Okay,
yeah. Cool.
Because I was hoping they'd have a chance if somebody with difficulties, all of a sudden had to walk another six blocks or something to get on the bus.
No, we make sure it's accessible. Yeah.
So, I got it on here. One, two, three, four, nice. Oh, I like the new buses a lot. Those are really nice buses, and they represent. I've heard the complaint before; they look terrible, but those new ones are really nice. So, and if you do a slideshow again, I would recommend it might not use black because you used up four of the toner boxes, but it really looks nice on black. But who am I picking on for that?
Duly noted.
So, but that wasn't a real complaint. So, that software, I love it. It goes 1/100 of an inch. Does that software actually tell you how many people come on and off at stops too?
They do offer that capability. We're currently working on refining it to suit our needs. So we haven't actually implemented it yet, but we're very close. So we'll be able to have, geocoded ridership data for, we'll be able to tell which stop had how many people, so we'll be able to see exactly how many stops we're getting,
That really helps when you're cutting stops out that you show that, no ridership or something. So.
Right.
Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Thank you.
So then does the software also have the capability of showing how that rider paid, whether it's full fare, reduced fare, voucher?
It will, yes. Once we implement it, yes, we have the different fare types on there. Yep.
All right. If there's no more questions from the commissioners, I'll open this up to public comment. Is there anybody here from the public that wanted to comment on this item? Seeing none, this was an information-only item. So we will go on to item 5 on the agenda, internal communications and administrative matters. First up is 5A, Street Operations Activity Report. You taking this, Patrick?
I will, but there is nothing outstanding in item 5A. If there are any questions, I'll take them. Otherwise, I will move on to 5B.
Is that free?
Acceptable? Thank you. And it's a short list. The Carson City Freeway multi-use path past 90% design. I'll just tell you that we are expecting to, with the STBG funding that was previously discussed at the Campo meeting, Carson City intends to amend that agreement for the Carson City Freeway multi-use path to include improvements to the adjacent airport road, pavement improvements as well as bicycle and pedestrian improvements. So look forward to that. Secondly, the flashing yellow arrow intersection improvement project. Those improvements are now well underway at the intersection of Carson and Winnie and Rupin Robinson. Ask drivers to be cautious in those work zones, but we're very, very much looking forward to those improved signal systems. The College Parkway Research Way intersection, I have to make sure to highlight the geometric improvements. The concrete work is all done. We were waiting for some equipment to come in. The poles were just installed today. The vertical poles were installed today. We've got the cabinet that we need. It's a very important part of this the process. For public knowledge, we're gonna try to put the word out here. Next week, Wednesday night, is when the work comes to put in the mast arms, the arms that stick out that signal heads go on. There will be traffic impacts next week, Wednesday night. And at this time, we expect that traffic signal to go live at 10 a.m. next week, Thursday. And I use words like expectation. Nothing's guaranteed this, a week out in advance, but at this time, that is our plan. And we very much look forward to doing that because that's definitely a safety-related project, and we're happy to have been working with Maverick on this as they implement their expansion of their business.
Patrick, will the yes. reader board stay out there for a while and then change the message from
that is, yeah,
work
yes.
to new signal?
Yes, thank you for pointing that out. We already put out reader boards to warn people of the change in traffic control ahead. We do that when there's a more significant change, so we typically do. We put those out in advance, leave them out afterwards as well. I'm not going to give you an update on the FLAP program. I don't think that there was any FLAP project on Sierra Vista Lane. I don't think there's anything notable, but we will add that as a project to be updated for future meetings starting next month.
And as you and I spoke earlier today, the streetlights are being installed at Empire Ranch Road and Highway 50.
Yes, and I will point out that was specifically requested through the Carson City Connect system by a couple of different residents. We worked with those residents and with the Nevada Department of Transportation, and now the Nevada Department of Transportation is installing two streetlights, one at the northwest corner and one at the southeast corner of US 50 and Empire Ranch Road, and we're very happy to have them do so.
It's nice because that's a school bus stop, and it is pitch black there in the morning. All right, we are on to, or did anybody have any questions, Patrick, on those items? No? Okay, then we'll move on to item six, board comments. We'll start on my right. The audience is left. Any comments?
Right here.
There. Oh, Jack. Seeing no comments, we will go to final public comment. Last chance, folks. Anybody want to come up and talk? I see nobody. So we'll move on to item eight. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion made.
We are adjourned. Thank you all very much.